the third pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Dante Fowler, Jr., defensive end, Florida.
I'm excited about this guy. I mean, you know what? His personality and his spirit and the way he plays the game, it'll match a personality of our defense. You know, plays hard in practice, plays hard in games. Football is extremely important to him, and that's the kind of mentality you need.
I think we made the team happy. I think this is a young guy that, you know, defensively we can build around. He offers us a lot of flexibility.
I love what they did with the stadium and, you know, the new scoreboards and everything like that. Jacksonville is a great place. I love it.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday morning to you live from Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran. I got four new tires on the car today, Tony.
Nice.
Had a jagged little, about a half-inch piece of glass.
I saw the picture on Twitter.
Jammed up in there. It was about actual size, the shot on Twitter. I tried to make a representative size. I don't know how a piece of glass gets jammed that far into your tire that easily. And, let you know, like, how, as you run over it, you wouldn't think that it would just
eat it.
Do it like the way it did, but it did nonetheless. And my boys at Tire Outlet took great care of me, and I got four new tires on the car, and I made sure to avoid Jay parking lot at least for the next week, and I'll give it up after that. Oh, Howard, do you cut through Jay parking lot on your way in?
I don't make the first right for that very reason, because I don't want to run over a construction worker.
Well, and you know what? That's the thing. Like, they've cleaned up a lot of the construction stuff. Certainly, there was a point in the last few months when you wouldn't want to go anywhere near that lot. I followed a minivan in yesterday, right behind him. No problem for him. Minivans have tougher tires, tougher drivers.
1 million shots.
One in a thousand. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, brother? How are you?
Good.
Haven't seen you in a few weeks.
Yeah, I think day before minicamp, Tony, that Monday.
Yeah.
Week ago Monday, yeah.
Yeah, so, last time we had you in, yeah.
So some, you know, it was a newsy week last week for a lot of reasons. And you know, now the rookies are still in the building here for another week or so, I think. They used to have that symposium. Now that every team just does their own thing. But, you know, training camp schedule came out, and my major takeaway is set up a lot of hitting. And people are saying, well, they're going to get tough. Well, I think you're going to have some veteran days off at some point.
And you probably should.
And you should, because granted, you want to establish a mindset, a culture, et cetera, et cetera. But the ultimate goal is to make sure your starters are ready for week one.
Right. I don't think Paul Posluszny needs a whole lot in the way of, you know, remedial hitting 101.
Yeah. I mean, these guys I'm sure they'll space it out where they'll work the first day of the New England practices. Some of them will sit out second. I looked back last year for the second day of the Bucs practice, six veterans sat out. So it's like, get your work in. You know, don't be, you know, because you don't want to put an A-list guy out there going against a C-list or trying to make a name.
Right,
for himself.
Trying to make an impression on the coaching staff and catch your eye. You know, but it really, Ryan, Tony, you think back over the history of the league, there used to be so much hitting. I mean, every day, two-a-day practices with full contact were the norm in a lot of places, and now, you know, during the season, you can't even have a full contact practice on an average of once a week.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first year I covered a league was 2004, which was Joe Gibbs' first year back, and he would have two a day, but he'd only still go one day in pads. And everybody thought, oh, Joe's scaling back. what he saw is, hey, you know, this is a 53-man roster, 46 on game day. You got to have your guys ready for the opener. So they would do, you know, what they do a 4:30 practice and like a 9:30 walkthrough. But now, I mean, these guys are doing walkthroughs. They're probably most of them are going to probably be inside.
Right. Jalen Ramsey's having the core muscle surgery. Sounds like, you know, maybe a sports hernia, something in that range. I can't diagnose him. I don't know. But, you know, it doesn't have to be something catastrophic, and they think he'll be ready for training camp. You have any indication that it's anything worse than that?
No. And you were thinking, well, I was thinking when they use the term core muscle, to me, that's sports hernia. Guys usually have that after the season so they can take their time with rehab. My guess, and it would make sense, to start him on PUP. You know, there's no reason to rush him back. And, you know, it'd be one of those things. It'd be interesting to see what the timeline was, because he was participating in OTAs. Then they scaled him back, and then he did nothing. So was it something he was trying to practice through, or he just flared up right away? shockingly, I expressed an unpopular opinion on Friday, saying, "Hey, you know, this is a concern. Here's why: he is your best player."
I agree with that being the best player.
And when they have surgery, that's always a concern. And now this is 2 in 2 years, a knee, and now this. I talked to a source in the league who said, "Hey, you know, his body type is a little gangly, which means he just maybe absorbs more punishment." And I mean, to me, he doesn't need to do anything in the preseason. If he needs to get 20 snaps in the third preseason game, that's all he needs. Get him ready for Houston, because you're going to need him against Hopkins. The second part is, what does this mean long term? Is he going to be somebody that is maybe more susceptible to it? And I just remember my second point. I was trying to make something up there. On Thursday, Todd Walsh said, "Hey, one of the wrinkles they're going to have on defense is in some situations they're going to have safeties playing corner to remove some wear and tear against their corners." Now that makes sense. You know, maybe in a short yardage situation, you take Ramsey and Boye out, you put a Jared Wilson as a third safety, or James Sample if he makes the team.
Because you're trying to jam those guys at the line anyway.
And you don't need closing speed or, you know, ball skills. You just need to be able to cover him in the end zone. So you sort of walk backwards and say, okay, maybe that's what he was talking about, because that was the day of the surgery. So on a scale of 1 to 10 with the Jalen Ramsey surgery, on a concern level, I put it right in the middle, because how long, you know, if he misses a lot of camp, will that impact his ability to get ready for the season?
Well, and that's the question. Right now, I mean, my concern level is not as high, because every expectation is he'll be ready for the start of the season and this shouldn't impact him. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, okay, fine, because I agree with you. I don't think he needs a ton of work to go out there in the preseason and prove what he's capable of doing. But if it comes training camp and there's kind of an open-ended question of when he's going to be able to take the field, then the concern level goes up, because he is so important to what you want to do.
I mean, and I think usually that line for me is the first preseason game, if a guy isn't practicing yet, because last year he was practicing, like shut him down for a week or so. You know, if you get to that first preseason game and he hasn't practiced yet, and this goes for any guy, you're looking, okay, if he gets activated a week later, then he takes another week, okay, that's the second preseason game. Well, now you're looking at one game as a tune-up. For some guys, is that enough? Yeah, for him, probably it is. So, it's, you know, right now they have some injury issues in the secondary. You know, Church, Gibson, Colvin, now Ramsey. That's 4 of your top 5 guys that are, their status is unknown. And I asked Doug Marrone on Thursday last week, "What's your confidence level on Gibson, Colvin, and Church being ready for start camp?" He won't answer it. To me, that means he doesn't know.
Or is it just kind of philosophically the organization now wants to give you as little injury information as they possibly can?
That's always part of the scenario. I go the other way, though, is if they were definitely going to be ready.
You want to get that word out, maybe?
Why not give them a little attaboy saying, hey, these guys have worked their butt off.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he said with Boye. He said, hey, when he got hurt, he stayed on schedule, he came back, he worked hard, and he got out there. So, to me, that was a little bit of a red flag, but, you know, come July 27th, it may be a moot point.
Now we'll find out come July 27th. Until then, a little over a month from now, I guess about 5 weeks or so, 5.5 weeks. Is it 5 weeks from today? It's Thursday. Thursday's the first practice, right?
I believe you're right, yeah.
Maybe 5 weeks from today that things get underway.
22, yeah.
We'll find out quickly enough. In the meantime, we'll make up all the fake news that we possibly can here on this program. That is not true, or is it? I don't know. You have to determine that. Today's question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We mentioned it with Dan and Jeff earlier this morning. Got thinking about this because a lot of people remember Fan Cam, John Port, who came in and did a show with us earlier this year, one of what we consider the Jaguar superfan base out there. And he gave Tony a copy of a book that was his personal favorite. Not a sports book, though.
No.
Got me thinking. I mean, I have so many sports books, Tony. Really, quite a library of sports books that I haven't read, honestly, because we get sent so many copies, preview copies, to have authors on, and maybe you'll skim through it or read the clippings and try to get a sense of what the book's about. But there are some books that stand out to me over the years. We'll talk about some of the ones that influenced us. And I honestly don't know if I'd be in this business if it weren't for some of the books that I read that kind of put me on the path to going into sports full time. So it doesn't have to be football related, but it does have to be nonfiction, a nonfiction sports book. In other words, if you read Field of Dreams in paperback, that does not qualify. I hate to break it to you, Tony. There's not a field in Iowa that you can really ascend into heaven directly from, at least far as I'm aware.
But maybe there's a book written about the Field of Dreams.
Maybe there
actually
is.
Built.
That, because there is a field. That field does exist.
Right. So if you read that and think that's the best you've read,
I just don't think you get on the Nirvana Express when you walk into the corn. That's my personal take on that. So you can weigh in today on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran. Of course, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, we get the text line going at 641-1010, driven by Duval Ford. The question of the day is, once again, what's the best nonfiction sports book, your favorite nonfiction sports book? Doesn't have to be the, quote, best. Doesn't have to be critically acclaimed. If you loved it, share the knowledge with us, especially if you're posting on Facebook or even on Twitter. Put a photo. Put a little photo of your book library, your sports book library up there, and let's see some of the interesting titles that you've got in there. So we'll discuss some of that today. We'll talk Jaguar football with you. You want to get in and pick the brain of Ryan O'Halloran, 641-1010 on the phone lines is the way to do that as well. We are live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran, Jaguars Today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Ryan O'Halloran here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. As I suspected, in a Jag-centric audience, Tony, more than one person may nominate Jags to Riches as one of their favorite or not.
Disappointed if somebody didn't.
Exactly, right? And with this audience. So Amish Jaguar is
Pete
the first
Prisco,
one in.
Jacksonville.
Pete Prisco, John Osier.
Yeah.
The combo platter of.
You missed my joke. Who submitted the text? Pete Prisco, Jacksonville.
Oh, I'm sorry. Advent. No, this was the first one. I'm sure Pete will follow up. You should have subtweeted him there. At OzDog12, Amish Jaguar said Jags to Riches. He only said Jags to Riches by John Osier, though.
Oh.
He didn't include Pete. When he's done with Gil Brandt, Pete will move on to Amish Jaguar, apparently. All right. Immediately following that tweet from Duval Doom, I won't say Jags to Riches because it's too obvious. So America's Game by Michael McCambridge.
Which is excellent.
Is baseball book?
No, it's football a football book. It's to the early roots of the NFL all the way through like the mid-2000s, basically, when the book was written. So if you want to really get like a broad view of the entire history of the National Football League, that's the book.
Best book you've read, Tony, nonfiction sports book.
That's hard. I can tell you the one that had the biggest impact on me when I was young, because I can remember getting Paper Lion and Mad Ducks and Bears the same year for Christmas from my dad. And it was the first time I had been exposed to, you know, that kind of sports writing where a guy embedded with a team doing something, and it was amazing.
This is the first time practically everyone was exposed to that kind of sports writing.
But
George Plimpton was a trendsetter.
Sure. So when I was like 8 or 9 is when I got those books. I can remember reading those, and they had a big impact on me. Honestly, probably my favorite that I've ever read is Joe Louis, a biography someone did about him called Hard Times Man, which was obviously just a biography of Joe Louis, but getting the behind-the-scenes story of what was going on with a black man who was a heavyweight champion in America basically during the World War II era is incredible. And the stories about, you know, what the nation was doing and how they were dealing with Joe Louis, because he was going up against a great German champ a couple times in that era, and Max Schmeling, that kind of stuff. So that's maybe my favorite nonfiction sports book.
O'Halloran?
Got a bunch of them, obviously.
All right, well, give me like the top three.
Well, in my formative years, The Worst Team Money Could Buy, a season with the New York Mets, Bob Clappis, John Harper. I read that when I was a senior in high school. They gave, you know, it was a terrible team, so they told a lot of
the 64 Mets, like the expansion year
92.
Team? Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, they spent, or 91, something like that. But they gave a lot, they had sidebars in the book about the job as a beat writer. So that was right in my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. Another Michael McCambridge book, The History of Sports Illustrated, was great. And then, because it's at the top of my brain, if you're a baseball fan, you should read Tom Verducci's The Cubs Way, about the building of this Cubs franchise. It is awesome.
Yeah.
And for the detail. And so those are three that strike me. But anything written by Dan Jenkins about golf or college football is great. So I have three bookshelves at home, and they're all packed. And so that's my advice is books. And but Jags of Riches is on that bookshelf.
There you go. That apparently co-authored, we're finding out now in a late-breaking update. Jay Osher and P. Prisco combining on that one. The book that really set me off into a deeper level of sports was The Glory of Their Times, which was a baseball book written, I think the tagline is something like the history of the early days of baseball by the men who played the game. And it was as much in their own words, there'd be, and every chapter was just a different Ty Cobb, you know, Honus Wagner, the greats of the early part of the 20th century. And I mean, I was a baseball crazy kid already, and I read that book, and it just took me into such a deeper appreciation of the game and the history and the statistics and everything. And, you know, I was the kind of guy that would read the baseball encyclopedia and memorize numbers and all that stuff.
Did you get, when I was a kid, I would always get the Elias Sports Bureau book? Which
I know exactly what you're talking about. Like the end of the year,
and then they put another one out in spring training. Would have all the splits and stuff pre-internet. God, I was a dork.
Well, Bill James and the whole sabermetrics thing was fascinating when that came out in the early 1980s. I mean, that was cutting edge stuff, and now that's basically what Moneyball is all based on.
Yeah.
But The Glory of Their Time stands out to me. Ball 4 is probably the best, the most critically acclaimed book that I've read, sports book, which was phenomenal. Basically the story of the 1969 Seattle Pilots team through the eyes of one of their pitchers, and just an embedded behind the scenes look that you'd never seen before in sports. But probably most of the best sports books I've read are baseball books. I just probably read a lot more baseball books than anything else. But if you want to share your top nominee for your favorite sports book of all time, they're pouring in right now on social media. You're certainly welcome to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Doom has a good one, Friday Night Lights. That was sort of groundbreaking.
I've seen that listed as the greatest sports book ever written
on
some list.
It's really good.
You know, and that's one I haven't read. You know, there are a lot. I guess, you know, you reach a certain point, at least for me, I reach a certain point, and I consume a lot more through the internet and stuff like that, so I don't read a lot of historical, you know, sports nonfiction.
Well, it's one of those books where there's no other book that can give you, you know, that behind-the-scenes feel of what high school football in Texas really is in these small towns. Like, we hear about those kind of stories. Friday Night Lights makes you feel like you're living it. Mm-hmm. For a season, basically, with these people. I mean, it's incredible. And you're getting, you know, the behind-the-scenes story with the families in this town and the kids that are playing and the team and all of it coming together at the same time. I mean, it really is an incredible book.
You know, and then he followed up probably with maybe the 15-20 year anniversary, and, you know, he was reviled in Odessa for the book, but he revisited those players. Were all open to talking to him about it because that was their life, and they felt it was accurately portrayed.
Yeah, you know who is the most prolific? I don't know if this is the case or not. Who feels like the most prolific sports book author of all time?
Feinstein,
Bert Sugar.
Oh yeah,
that dude would have 6 books out a year. If he didn't have a book out every 2 months, it was unbelievable. You know, half of them were probably Bert Sugar's lists of, you know, interesting sports tidbits.
Sure.
But that dude knew how to make a buck off putting a printed word between a couple of hardcovers. 641-1010 if you want to weigh in on that or anything else. Derek Carr got a new contract. Just imagine, we could be talking about it. Could be the talk of Jacksonville. It could have been for the talk for the last 2 months. Will the new contract come for Jaguar quarterback Derek Carr, and how will Khalil Mack feel about this, right? But 5 years, $125 million. The going rate when you've got a young, what you feel is an ascending potential superstar quarterback, played at an MVP level, top 5 MVP consideration for most of the year last year before he got hurt. It's you know, you're going to see these numbers push higher and higher and higher, but what else would you possibly do if you're the Oakland Raiders to try to lock that guy up?
Yeah, and, you know, Khalil Mack is the multi-time All-Pro, but you take care of the quarterback first, and you work from there. And not work down, you work across from there. You figure he's next. When this conversation starts in the offseason, okay, is it going to be more than luck? Well, it just inched up a little bit. You know, now we see what Kirk Cousins does, but
And Stafford.
God, he's been a lot.
Stafford's going to get another one. I know. Hey, it's great if you can get
him. Never won a playoff game, but hey.
You know what? If we could throw it through a brick wall and play as well as Stafford has, we'd probably get one too.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm thinking off the top of the head here. after Carr, who's the next quarterback now? Drafted quarterback, like
Winston and Mariota. I mean, probably. Would it be that duo kind of, right? I mean, I think both teams feel like they've gotten their guy. Clearly, what the Bucs have done this offseason to surround Winston with more weapons, getting DeSean Jackson in, drafting Chris Godwin out of Penn State, and O.J. Howard out of Alabama. You know,
they can do it as soon as next offseason.
Yes.
With either one of those guys. Could. Doesn't mean they would, but they could.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, you know, it's good. You play revisionist history when a team doesn't perform well. The Jaguars had a week with Derek Carr at the Senior Bowl. They chose to go another direction with Blake Bortles, you know, 2 years ago or last year at this time. You're saying, you know,
Let's not kid ourselves either. There was a lot, you know, what the Jags specifically felt about Derek Carr may have dovetailed with this, but the talk in NFL circles, the concern about Derek Carr was how do they handle pressure, right? And when you looked at Fresno State, where he played in college, playing against, I think it was USC, in Derek Carr's final bowl game, it was a quantum step up in the level of competition that he typically faced week in, week out, and he didn't handle it very well. Mm-hmm. And that was the lasting image in a lot of people's mind, like, hey, this guy's great. Was he too much of a system guy at Fresno State? Can he handle staring down the proverbial gun barrel and delivering strikes? Well, he's proven that he can.
Yeah, and the Jaguars, took Bortles at three, and all these other teams. I mean, Houston took the guard because they didn't take Derek Carr because they thought that name was scarred in that town. It's one of the dumbest excuses I've ever heard in my life. Houston now had trade up for Watson. They feel they found the guy again. They've been searching for a long time. Derek Carr played for Greg Olsen his rookie year, lost his first 10 starts. That's how you handle adversity. He's thrived since then as they've surrounded him with some players, some offensive linemen. So, I mean,
did you feel at the time that was the dumbest dumbest reasoning with the Carr thing with the Texans? Do you remember what you thought at the time?
I remember this is ridiculous.
Did you?
I did because you can't let. I mean, it wasn't the same coach. It wasn't the same GM. Is you need a quarterback help, and it may be one thing if the Texans drafted him first overall. They drafted Clowney. Can you imagine they had a Clowney Carr combo right now?
Clowney Carr.
Clown car.
Yeah, that clown car, man. That would be pretty ridiculous. It would be pretty devastating. Let's be glad that didn't happen. You think back, and we say off. Well, you know, Jags didn't have to take Bortles there. They could have waited and got one of those quarterbacks in the second
round.
Can't
wait.
Derek Carr wasn't on the board for the Jags either in the second round. You know, who knows if they let's say they had liked him. Do you like him enough to take him at three? That's a question. If you don't like him enough to take him at three, how much of a priority is he? You can't be that sure he's your franchise guy. It's a lot easier to take that chance at the top of the second round, but what do you do? Going through that hypothetical, let's say they had taken Khalil Mack with their pick, and you come to the second round. Oakland had the 36th pick in the round. I'm looking at it right now, and obviously took Carr there. The Jags had the 39th pick. What would you have been willing to get up? How strong would your conviction be for a guy who you had the chance to draft as a top five guy and obviously didn't feel like he was worth it?
And at that point, if the Jags were calling the trade up for a quarterback, they would have had to give up a lot because teams know they're desperate.
Right, and keep in mind, Minnesota, I think, trade up one spot, was it, to get Bridgewater? I know they just snuck into the end of the first round because I think they wanted to make sure Bridgewater was eligible for that extra year on his contract.
I know it was the end of the first round. I can't remember how far they went.
Well, they took him 32nd. I'm just trying to remember. They got it in a trade from Seattle. I could probably find out what the details were on that. Second and fourth round selections to move up for Minnesota's second and fourth round selections, which was the four, so they moved up from 40. That's not bad for a fourth round pick to move up from 40 to 32. That's a pretty cheap price, actually.
I mean, they found the Seahawks were just wanted to get out of the first round.
Yeah, obviously.
They probably had some cap issues.
So I suppose in that regard, if you're the Jags and you made a play for the same pick, you could have certainly given up a third round pick, a second and third, if you felt like that was a guy. Khalil Mack and, say, Derek Carr at the expense of the extra third round pick. Of course, you know, they used that to move up to get Brandon Linder. If no, or was that the one that they moved up to get Allen Robinson? I'm trying to remember. They obviously got Marquise Lee with their pick at 39.
Yeah, and then they Linder was a third round pick. They moved
up to get Robinson.
Yeah, at 61.
Did they move up to get Linder too, though?
Yes,
they did. Right, but he still was a third round pick.
Yep, that was a wild, wild night. They traded a fourth and a sixth to move up from 105 to 93 to get Linder. Because I heard Dave Caldwell coming into the media room that night. He goes, the guards were going flying off the board, and they felt they needed to move up.
Well, that's a good trade, you know, sixth-round pick to the guy who's been the best offensive lineman for the last several years.
Yeah, they had a wealth of picks, and that's why they had him, is they moved up in the second to grab Allen Robinson. That's worked out. They moved up in the third for Brandon Linder. Marquise Lee, at the time, was a steal. There was a knee issue. Like, I remember they took him. Jerry Sullivan came in and says, I just started looking at him this morning. Didn't think he was going to be there.
Right, right. So, they thought he was for top 20 pick-ish, you know, in that kind of range. All right, when we come back, we'll discuss, among other things, what does Blake Bortles need to do to earn some similar kind of, whether it's the exact money Derek Carr gets or someone else, what does he need to do here in Jacksonville this year or maybe over the next couple of years to earn that kind of trust from the organization to get that big money extension and stay right here in Jacksonville? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Ryan O'Howard here with you. 641-1010, the number if you'd like to be a part of the program. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. What do I love the most about shaving with Harry's? Well, you know, pretty much everything. Great shave, best I've ever had with any blades out there, and the convenience of having them delivered to my front door. But the price, man, I am a guy that likes a good bargain. And when you get the best at the best price, how can you pass that up? If you haven't tried Harry's yet, I've got a great offer for you. They're so confident that you will love their blades as much as I do. They're going to offer you their set for free if you cover shipping. You get a free trial set, including a Truman set ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, and a post-shave bomb, an almost $20 value for you to try. This offer, though, is only available for my listeners if you use promo code Dempsey at harrys.com when you check out. So get started with Harry's today. Get their free trial offer. I said free, almost a $20 value. All you have to do is pitch in a few bucks for shipping. Get your free trial set, including a handle, blade, shave gel, and post-shave bomb by going to harrys.com right now. Enter code Dempsey at checkout. That's harrys.com. Use promo code Dempsey, and don't wait. Get started with Harry's today. About 15 minutes away from this date in the NFL and the Honda Drive as well, or this date in football and the Honda Drive. Speaking of football, the other football, Tony, 1994, 23 years ago, what happened in the other football on this day? The year may tip you off to that. Ryan O'Halloran, I just saw his hand shoot up.
Some kind of World Cup. What
an eager little question answer over there.
Did we beat Mexico, get to the quarters?
Mr. O'Halloran.
Well, it's definitely a World Cup, but I'm trying to think, did it start or did the U.S. beat Colombia?
Colombia!
Own goal. That didn't work out for that guy.
It did not work out for that guy.
Did y'all watch that 30 for 30?
I did not. What did he got, shot in the street?
The two Escobars? It's so good. It's so good because it's, you know, it's Colombia, so it's the rise of Pablo Escobar and at the same time the rise of Colombian football. And the aftermath of that game, like when the players showed up for that game that day, they were basically told your families are being held in a hotel. Beat the USA. Like that's what they were dealing with when they walked onto that field.
That's a little pressure.
Yeah. So that guy had that own goal. I can't even imagine what was going through his head when that happened. Like I can't imagine.
Right.
You know, and he got back home and he was shot and killed in the street.
Shot in the street because he
gave
up.
Over a soccer game.
Right. An own goal. Did he knock it in? I don't remember.
He did.
The goalie himself kind of fumbled the ball.
No, it was a defender.
Oh, what was that? It wasn't the goalie who got it.
It was straight on goal.
Yeah.
That was 23 years.
What else?
Ago
what else you got? Good news.
well, let's think positively here. Okay, Derek Carr gets the $25 million a year contract extension. Basically, people talk about who got more new money, who got more higher average. What? You got $25 million a year for the next 5 years. You got plenty, okay?
I mean, I saw Glockamp Forrest say about 69 earlier this morning. Let's just say, hey, 3 years, first 3 years, totally guaranteed. That's what I'll say, 75 new money.
But perfect.
That's still perfect.
That's where you want to be, right?
I'm sure he gets a check coming up.
I think he'll survive, you know. And it always made me laugh, and it continues to this day when players talk about security. talking about the years on the contract. Like, security has nothing to do with how many years. Give me 1 year at 20 over 10 years at 1.5. Right? It's pretty simple. Derek Carr's got all the security he'll ever need for himself and many future generations if he's not a dummy. Blake Bortles had the fifth-year option picked up, which we know is not guaranteed for anything other than injury. What scenario, Ryan, would have to unfold? I know we've kicked this around a little bit. What percentage chance do you think the Jaguars are talking long-term contract with Blake? I mean, under what range of scenarios? Is it a minimum of wins? Is it a minimum? Because if he goes out and say, let's say he throws 32 touchdowns against 7 picks, and they still only go 7-9, that's a pretty excellent season, right? Certainly major trend in the right direction. Let's say he's like 63-64% completion. You may say if he has those numbers, they're going more than 7-9, but
maybe not.
Maybe not, right? It could happen like that.
I mean, he could be a, I mean, you hear this term in the NBA, he could be a good stats, bad team guy. You know, tough for in the NFL to do that, but look at 2 years ago, he went 35-18 and they went 5-11.
Correct. But yeah. That's what the 18, this is where I'm talking about, yeah. Scenario where if that interception number was way, 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 way down, which.
Well, let's go, I mean, let's say, let's, you know, like, let's go to your scenario. I'm going to fudge the numbers a little bit.
Okay.
Let's go 7-9. Let's go 25 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. So he's a 2-1 guy, but okay. He's definitely lowered his interception.
Not giving him the deal
they
on
play,
that.
They let him play it out. They play that. I think they bring him back. And let
play
him
on the fifth year, 10.
Play it on that fifth year. Let's say they go 7-9, and he goes 32-10.
Okay.
I still think they let him play it out, and because from his standpoint is, if they have any, I just think under any scenario other than a playoff berth, they're going to let him play out that fifth year or let him.
All right. So same numbers that you're talking about, or maybe even a little worse. Let's say he's 28-12. They go 9-7 and win the division.
Well, then okay. Are you looking at a Tannehill comparison? Is, do you give May of 2015 Tannehill 6 years, $96 million extension, almost a play as you go thing? If you're the Jags, do you go a 3-50? I don't want to go 60. That's $20 million a year. Do you go 3 years at an average of $60 million?
If you're Blake Bortles' representative and you had a year like you're talking about, would you sign a 3-year, $60 million deal?
Well, of course I would, if, from a team standpoint.
Is, you would, really?
I would, because then you're looking at 4-78.
4 years, 78, including what you're making this year.
Well, if you're Bortles camp, I don't think we're going to be having this conversation.
Okay, that's why it's
but
a
hey, this hypothetical is on June 22nd. Is the fifth year is what, 18.5?
Yeah, something okay. Like that.
If I'm him, I was like, okay. That's guaranteed.
Basically, yeah.
Basically, so I start working off of that.
Right.
And
that's why I'm saying 3 years, 60. I don't know if that gets it done that kind of leap.
Carr, with him getting his contract extension today, there's now 14 quarterbacks in the league that are averaging $20 million a year.
Averaging.
Right. I mean, that's what it costs to have okay quarterback.
Because in that scenario, if I'm the Jags, 3 years, 60 may not interest me from the Jags' perspective, because if I have him for 18.5, and I decide, again, hypothetical here, he plays very well next year and plays great the year after, I could franchise him. And my two-year average, you take the average of the top five guys, it's going to be less than 25 a year. It's going to be, let's say it's 22 a year. So, okay, you franchise him for 22. That's 2 years, $40 million. Maybe you would want to lock him in, I guess, for that third year. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. You just play it year by year.
Well, you know, if you're a Jaguars and you really think he's the guy, do you want to be proactive and get something done at more of your price before Winston and Mariota?
Possibly. Yeah, and that's another factor in the whole thing, too. But do you reward – how much are you willing to reward and stick your neck out for, hot, cold, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, which he's been – he was hot in some categories 2 years ago. He's very cold in others. Last year he was pretty cold across the board.
That's kind of where I fall. Like, I fall on it, and we've talked about this before, where for me it's almost a playoff win is where I'm really going to start talking extension, because I do have the fifth-year option that I can exercise on, and he can't do anything about that. Like, I can still control him for two more years past this year with the franchise tag if I need to go that direction. So seeing one season from Blake with what I've seen through the first 3 years, probably isn't going to be enough for me to start seriously negotiating a long-term deal. Now, if they win a playoff game or they go to the AFC Championship game, that changes the scenario a little bit. I don't foresee that kind of thing happening. But if it did, that changes the variables on it a little bit. But you, if you're going to talk 3 years, $60 million, you can do that anyway. Essentially, I mean, you can basically
through the
do,
franchise.
Yeah, you don't have to go to negotiate a contract to have that.
But the beauty of doing it 3 years, 60 is it's locked in with the franchise tag. You know how it accelerates in that third year. He's got you over a barrel after 3 years.
Yeah, it could turn into Cousins.
Right,
like you're risking it turning into the Cousins situation right now.
Would you pay Cousins right now if you were Washington?
Well, from a fiscal standpoint, it makes more sense than putting the tag on him. You know, because what is it? You know, you can lower that number a little bit in the future. I pay him because it's the devil you know.
Exactly.
You're not going to, the Redskins are probably not going to be bad enough this year because they're going to be able to score, that they're going to be able to play themselves in the position to start over with a rookie, one of those top quarterbacks. I think he is not worth it, but it's better than the alternative.
Knowing that he, you know, if he plays it out this year, is going to go probably into unrestricted free agency, and that San Francisco kind of has a guy holding down the spot for a year in Brian Hoyer, that he's got a landing spot. I don't even know if I'm Kirk Cousins, what would it take right now to agree to take me off the market? Would you want
25.1?
And that's what I'm saying. Do you have to get more than Derek Carr because you're the next guy?
It's a good day for Kirk Cousins, his agent, Mike McCartney, because I'm sure they've been grinding with Bruce Allen, who's just, you know, Kenny McCardle in this building could tell you about Bruce Allen and renegotiating deals and adding extensions. It's, you know, tough to do that. But if I'm the Redskins, I'm looking at this number. Is right now I'm looking at, say, we don't want to lose him for nothing. If you don't want to, they should have traded him.
And if you're Kirk Cousins, don't you have to? I mean, obviously he's had success with Shanahan there in Washington, and but Washington, you talk about the skill guys that Washington has put around him. They lost some guys, but they immediately replenished, you know, the cupboard. He's got great guys to throw to this year. Do you want to leave that situation if you're Kirk Cousins and take a chance that Shanahan's going to be able to turn around the San Francisco 49ers, who right now are one of the handful of worst teams in the league?
Yeah, I mean, only if it's personal at this point. But
that's a big question we can't answer.
You know, the NFC East is, you know, Philadelphia's defense isn't great. The Giants trending up a little bit. Dallas's defense, not great. So that's why he's been able to put up a lot of good numbers, and that's a winnable division this year. If you go to San Francisco in year two of that regime, I think they're still a little bit away. And you look at San Francisco on offense right now, they have nothing. I mean, outside of maybe a couple of linemen.
No, but Pierre Garçon and Jeremy Curley will be leading the way. What, Vance McDonald, is he still out there?
He got an extension.
So you got him, you got Carlos Hyde and Joe Williams, the rookie at running back. Yeah, it's not exactly a star-studded group of skill position guys.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, for Kirk Cousins now, you know, he's made life-changing money because of the tag. Now it's like, okay, what's the best position to actually try and win?
That's what I'm talking about, because I get it, it's not me, it is significant money, it's life-changing money to us, but the difference between 23 and 25 million, I mean, when you consider all the factors, relocation, hey, what about state taxes in California, for goodness sakes, assuming that they want you? What if they're in position for the number one pick and they say, you know what, Kirk, we do like you a lot, but this Sam Darnold kid could be a generational game changer for us out here, and we're going to go that direction.
And Darnold's rookie deal will be 1 year worth of Kirk Cousins.
Right, exactly.
Probably less.
Right, and his ceiling, and maybe it's not him, maybe it's Josh Allen or one of these, Josh Rosen, one of the other highly regarded quarterbacks next year, that San Francisco made to say, hey, you know what, no, we're not. It's not like they can negotiate with him now anyway. Mm-hmm. Who knows what kind of back room conversations are being had.
And three things on taxes. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Carr's contract is constructed, because are they 2 years away from Las Vegas? And are they 3 years away? And also, Jameis Winston, Florida, no state tax. Marcus Mariota, Tennessee, no state tax.
Right.
So when those guys are going to walk away with more money.
Right, the actual money that they're going to receive is bigger.
Kirk Cousins, Virginia is where they're based.
Do teams negotiate off that? You know, we always hear, like, from a player's perspective that would interest a player, and I think it would.
I think, I mean, it looked like that had an impact on Calais Campbell.
Like, here's the bottom line, what you'll make in Denver compared to what you'll make here.
Because it looked like Denver was having to up their offer just to make it even with the Jaguars' take home.
No matter what's written on your contract, it's what's written on your paycheck that ultimately matters for you. All right, we will come back to Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL to follow. CBS Sports did a ranking of all the last place teams from last year, eight of them, eight divisions, obviously, and which team among those is most likely to go worst to first.
Damn well, it better be these guys, or else I'm not listening.
There's Mr. Positive, ladies and gentlemen, for the Florida Times Union, Ryan O'Halloran here with us. Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues live at Everbank in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, this day in football history presented this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We go back to 1979. Yes, something happened on this day in football history. Despite the fact it's deep in the offseason. June 22nd, 1979, the Pro Football Researchers Association formed in Canton, Ohio. Six dudes who were big into the history of the National Football League just got together. Pretty much every one of them was named an officer. There were only a few of them there, and they started putting out a newsletter more about how they formed their club than any actual historical stuff, but it grew from there. It's still going. They say the purpose of the organization is to foster the study of professional football as a significant and athletic institution, to establish an accurate historical account of professional football, and to disseminate research information. Who knew? The Pro Football Researchers Association. Happy birthday to you. Speaking of birthdays, Ryan O'Halloran, are you ready?
Yes.
You need a big comeback from the last time we did this. We flipped the script, and I gave you descriptions. You try to guess whose birthday it was, and let's just say we're going back to the old format today. Yes.
It wasn't broke.
Longtime Chicago Bear quarterback Bobby Douglas. A lot of people reference how many quarterbacks the Bears have had since Bobby Douglas. He started maybe about a half dozen years in a row for them. How old is Bobby Douglas today?
Jeez, I'm trying to remember his era. Let's go 81.
He is 70 years old today. You're really aging that guy. All right, this one's a little more contemporary for you. He is a four-time Pro Bowler. Tony, we were talking yesterday about how infrequently Tom Brady was a first-team All-Pro, right?
Correct, yes.
Kurt Warner was a two-time first-team All-Pro, just like Brady. Four-time Pro Bowler, two-time league MVP, and just got inducted this year into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or actually will go in coming up, but he just got elected to go in. So how old is Kurt Warner?
Kurt Warner.
Former bag boy.
Older quarterback. He is 47.
He is 46, and we usually do it within a year, so you're good on that. What is Amsterdam Admirals for him? Was that the team?
Yes.
That he
then
played
a bag
for?
Boy.
Bag boy.
And then hopefully he'll be giving a speech the day before a preseason football game this year, unlike last year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's after this year. They moved the game up to Thursday night.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Kurt Warner, was he the oldest starting quarterback before Manning to start a Super Bowl? Because I fast-forwarded because I thought he was maybe 38 when he played for Arizona against Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm thinking the third time's a charm for him.
And I added 10 to that.
Quite possibly was. I think very deserving of his spot in the Hall of Fame anyway. You talk about the history of the National Football League. Kurt Warner has a significant story to be told in there. And
great player.
At his peak, man. I mean, how crazy was that 99 season? Out of nowhere, 41 touchdowns. We're kind of used to 40 touchdown seasons nowadays. You didn't see it nearly as much. It might have only been one of the second or third times other than Marino with the 48 and 84. Here's one for you. Champ Bailey, right? Seventh pick by those Washington Redskins in the year he came out of Georgia. He was a 12-time Pro Bowler, Champ Bailey was. Not yet eligible for the Hall of Fame, but he will be soon. And a three-time first-team All-Pro. How old is Champ Bailey today?
He is 40.
He is 39 years old today. And then finally, this guy has since left us after being born. Davey O'Brien, okay, won the Heisman Trophy. The next year, he was the fourth overall pick in the National Football League. Played a couple of years with the Philadelphia Eagles. After 2 years, he retired from football to become an FBI agent.
Whoa.
Right? He decided, I'm going to be an FBI agent. He did that for a decade. He resigned from the Bureau. Then he went to work for H.L. Hunt and Land Development, the Hunt family of the Kansas City Chiefs. O'Brien later entered the oil business, was an advisor to Lamar Hunt during the founding of the American Football League. If Davey O'Brien, for whom the top collegiate quarterback award is named for, was alive today, what birthday would he be celebrating?
He'd be really old. 104.
He'd be on Good Morning America. He's 100 exactly today, or would be 100. He lived to the ripe old age of 60 and passed away in 1977. So there you have it. The State in Football presented by Dr. James McCullough's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done and you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCullough's office at 620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccullough.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Well, as we've already discussed this morning, the Oakland Raiders and quarterback Derek Carr have agreed to a contract extension with 5 years, $125 million coming Derek Carr's way. They had put a deadline at the beginning of training camp to get that deal done. It was expected to be announced by the end of this week. It obviously came out earlier this morning. He just edges out Andrew Luck as the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Andrew Luck with a deal that averages $24.6 million a season right now. New York Jets linebacker Lorenzo Maldon could be facing up to a year in jail stemming from an April incident at a nightclub. Maldon was arrested yesterday, charged with misdemeanor assault. If he doesn't face any jail time, he could still be subject to discipline from the league after the legal proceedings are finished. Green Bay Packers defensive lineman LaTroy Guyon was charged with DUI after an arrest Wednesday in Hawaii.
It was his birthday yesterday. Yeah. I remember coming across the birthday list and going, nah, he's not deserving of mention.
After being tested during a traffic stop, blowing just over the legal limit at .086, he was arrested and has been released on $500 bail.
If you're in Hawaii, you don't need a car.
I've never been to Hawaii. Is it
First of all, if you can afford to go to Hawaii, you can afford a cab. You don't need a car. You're probably paying more to park it than drive it.
I'm saying LaTroy Guyon, it doesn't surprise me that he's the one in this story. You know what I mean? He's not good. Decision making has not been his strong suit.
No. Team spokesman for the Packers said they are aware of and monitoring the situation, as usually is the case with these kind of stories. Guyon, who turned 30 yesterday, was drafted in the fifth round of the 2008 NFL draft out of Florida State. And finally, Eric Decker, who signed with the Tennessee Titans earlier this week, was set to make $6.5 million this season with the Jets. Instead, after being released, he has signed a one-year $3.85 million deal with Tennessee. $2.5 million of that is a signing bonus, with another $1.5 million available to him in incentives for the 2017 season.
I think it's a great move by the Titans.
It's not a bad move.
Yeah, I mean, because they need a receiver help. Corey Davis.
Right. Well, I mean, Corey Davis is his potential is spectacular, but he's a rookie. Yeah. And Rishard Matthews played very well in the second half of the season last year. But you look at that guy and you're like, he's more of an NFL number three type player. You see the story yesterday, Tajae Sharpe, who was the talk of the offseason last year, could be their number one target among the wide receiver core in 2016. At least that's what they thought heading into training camp. Could be on the roster bubble this year. It's off-field issues and injury issues as well.
Yeah, I think Decker and Walker are going to be their 1-2 again.
Delaney, sure.
Because you could tell, right? They'll probably just try and get those two guys on the same side of the formation and try to get Delaney against the linebacker, and Decker in the slot against the third corner. So, I mean, they need to get Mariota some help because they can run it.
It's not like they want to throw it around the lot like willy-nilly. They want to run it as much or more than any team in the league, and they had a lot of success doing that last year behind a pretty good offensive line. Gibby, what did Booger McFarland have to say about Cam Newton? You brought this up to us earlier today. Give us the details on this.
Yeah, so a tweet from Ross Tucker from SiriusXM says that Booger McFarland, talking about Cam Newton, says, "People that I talk to," this is Booger talking, "in Carolina tell me Cam Newton is not a leader and not well-liked by a lot of his teammates."
I'm sure that will get pushback from some of his Carolina teammates. Right? You don't know what's going on with Cam Newton. Look, Cam Newton has had this rap ever since his days at the University of Florida, right? And going back, and you got some guys that swear by him, others that think that Cam Newton, no matter how big a star he is, thinks he's a bigger star than he is. And look, we've all seen him in person. Cam Newton is as standoffish as any guy, but that's to the media. I don't know how he is in the locker room. I can't say. For all I know, Booger McFarland is spot on. I'll say this. I don't think Booger McFarland's making this up. I'm sure someone has told Booger McFarland how widespread that opinion of Cam Newton is. I don't know. Certainly didn't seem to impact him when they went 15-1 and when he won league MVP. You know?
No, look, Cam is one of those guys. I'm not surprised this kind of story would come out about Cam Newton.
If you were to say this story about any starting quarterback in the National Football League, he might be the first one that you thought of.
Cam, I've joked around. He did the commercial years ago with Steve Smith.
Yes.
And he had the camera on his shoes in the closet so that Steve Smith couldn't touch his shoes. I'm like, that's not all that unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
That like Cam Newton would have something like that so that somebody doesn't touch his stuff. Like, that's something that would be in line with how I think of Cam Newton. He is a great football player. Obviously, he was absolutely should have been the MVP of the league 2 years ago when he was. Can he lead Carolina back to those kind of heights? I think he can, but I'm also not surprised that somebody in that locker room would be rubbed the wrong way by Cam Newton. Just because he's the quarterback doesn't mean you get a complete pass on being a jerk.
And when you win, you keep your mouth shut for the most part, right? You go 15-1, the guy takes you to the Super Bowl. Even if he didn't perform in the Super Bowl the way an MVP should, it's tough to
should have dove after
critical.
That ball, for sure.
There's no question about it. I mean, and I think that he got legitimate criticism for that. But then when you fall off to 6-10, I think that's what they were the next year. A lot easier to get those slings and arrows going.
A little bit last year, obviously. Look, and he hasn't thrown a ball yet this offseason.
He hasn't.
This
offseason. Neither has Luck.
No.
You know, I mean, there's it's interesting. Some of these quarterbacks out there are a little bit unknown as to how effective they're going to be come training camp time. All right, we will come back. I told you we've got that worst to first article projecting which teams that finish last in the divisions have the best chance to make the leap all the way up to first place. Where do the Jags factor in? Yes, they were a last place team last year. And we'll check in on a robust text line this morning as well at 641-1010, text line driven by Duval Ford. With Fat Tony and Ryan O'Howard, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars today live at Everbank here on 1010XL. Yes, got a flat tire yesterday. Yes, ran over a piece of glass. Of course, the first stop I made was to TireOutlet.com. Got on that app, and I picked the retail location of my choice, the one that was most convenient for me, put in the make and model of my car. Boom, tires waiting for me when I got there. I talk about wholesale pricing, they deliver. Talk about premium service, they go above and beyond. TireOutlet.com is the only name you need to know for tires. The reason they can give you that wholesale pricing, over 300,000 tires in the local inventory. Hop on board. If you have a problem, we hope you don't, but if you do with your tires, Tire Outlet and TireOutlet.com. All right, Agent Gibbs spinning the hits today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union here with you on Jaguars Today.
Thanks for Andrew, a little JT.
Yeah, well, he knows you, you know.
Absolutely,
little
Martin.
Things that make you happy there. Agent Gibby is a big O'Halloran guy. Your eight last place finishers. Have you looked at the CBS article, by the way?
I have not.
All right, bring up the standings from last year, okay? Dig them up and look at who finished in last place. O'Halloran, when I said bring up the standings, reach for his headset. What he did. Then he said, oh, that's what that O was about. Wait a minute. Got to go to the keyboard
Here's my excuse. I thought Gibby was going to read them.
Oh, you thought Gibby would read them. I see what you're saying.
I thought you were talking to him.
Don't you have the standings handy in front of you from last year?
Oh,
give us a
man, there's some terrible teams.
Bad teams. Give me from AFC East through NFC West, that way that we typically look at the standings.
Sure. AFC East, the New York Jets.
Right.
The North, the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
The South, your Jacksonville Jaguars. Ugh. The West, the now Los Angeles Chargers. In the NFC, in the East, Philadelphia.
Okay.
The North, Chicago. The South, Carolina. And the West, San Francisco.
All right. The article is, which of these last place teams have the best chance of going worst to first this year? In other words, last place in their division last year, first place in 2017. Who has the longest odds? Who has the worst
Jets.
Chance? Of course it's the
They're
Jets.
They're playing in a division with the Patriots.
Right.
There's no chance.
That's that enough if it weren't for the fact that they're dissembling their team of most of the talent that's on there.
They have less of a chance than Cleveland because of who's at the top of their division.
I absolutely agree. And that's why they come in eighth here. O'Halloran, any arguments? Who do you nominate for the next team on the list, O'Halloran?
After the Jets?
Yep.
Least
likely to go worst to first?
I would say Chicago.
Okay, the Chicago actually did not come in next. It was the Cleveland Browns who came in next. You could split hairs on a lot of these here. You got to look at the division. With Chicago, you do have Green Bay. You had a good Minnesota team. You have a competitive Detroit team. So it's a tough division. But I think most people look at the AFC North and feel, you know, Cincinnati was uncharacteristically off last year based on recent trends. Baltimore and Pittsburgh usually tough. Anyway, the Cleveland Browns. Possibly going with DeShone Kizer at quarterback this year, came in seventh. Next up, San Francisco had the longest odds.
I think they're going to be terrible. You don't want to say they're trying to be, but them and the Jets are both trying to position themselves
for a quarterback. Appropriately.
They will be so much more competitive, though, with Hoyer than anything the Jets have at quarterback, I think, this year. So anyway, San Francisco comes in there, and you know, you got Seattle in the division. Who knows what to make of the Rams? They're supposedly a team on the come for the last few years. And Arizona, what Carson Palmer are you going to get? The one who was good in the latter half of the year, the one who was terrible in the early part of the year last year?
I think the Cardinals are going to regret not making a play for one of those guys in the middle of the first round quarterback-wise. They're chasing that golden ring one more time. I don't think it's in their grasp. You know, so they're going to be starting over next year.
Mike Jarecki, who works for Extra Sports out there, is kind of our go-to guy and has been for a long time with Arizona, said going into the draft, he nailed the Hassan Reddick pick, Tony, in our mock draft. And said that all you hear about Arizona being interested in these quarterbacks in the first round, there's no way they're taking one of these guys at 13 if Reddick is available. So they weren't available. We can never know for sure if that would have happened or not, but you may be right. They may regret it. The Chicago Bears,
gotta be next.
They are next, as Ryan suggested, the Chicago Bears. So we get to the top four, and coming in,
I would say Jacksonville.
Jacksonville is in fourth place. It says, at first glance, seems like the Jags should be higher on this list. The AFC South is an annual disaster, after all, and the Jaguars once again are coming off an offseason where they spent big to turn their defense into a juggernaut. Not only that, but they tried for the first time to make their offense Bortles-proof so they could be due for improvement on both sides of the ball. Alas, they're still the Jaguars, and around here we're going to have to see it before we believe it, at least this time. Plus, the division actually looks surprisingly frisky this year. The Texans coming off back-to-back division titles, won in spite of dreadful quarterback play. They now have Deshaun Watson at the helm. Plus, they're getting J.J. Watt back. We talked about this yesterday. The Colts should again be strong offensively with Andrew Luck leading the way. They finally spent a bunch of cash to fix their defensive front. We'll see if that happens or if that plays out that way. The exotic smash-mouth Titans gave Mariota some new weapons and added playmakers on defense. It might actually be tough to win the division this year. Well, tough for the AFC South, so says CBS Sports. For that reason, the Jags finished fourth in our rankings, if not necessarily the division.
I mean, the Jags have blown their opportunity in this division the last couple of years when it was bad.
Terrible. Historically terrible. Now, you know, certainly 2 years ago.
You know, so this past year, 9-7, 9-7, 8-8, and 3-13. They were close to competing for the division.
No, they were
not.
I
think the Colts are going to bounce back a little bit. It's all dependent on luck. I think Tennessee, you know, Tennessee could be one of those teams that goes 9-7 but doesn't make it, or they maybe slip back a little bit with expectations. Houston, as long as Watt's healthy, if he's healthy, I think they're the pick to win the division. But you know, the Jaguars, you know, you look back and just what they squandered the last couple of years. Now the teams have gotten better and they have to really get better.
All right, moving along, and I don't disagree with much of that. Yesterday I said 45% chance for each of the Texans and the Titans if I was betting, and I might lay 10% on the Jags. I'm not a believer in Indy, but I was thinking about that. I really, you know, you say things. I do think about what I say. I thought maybe I'd give it 7% Indy and 3% Jacksonville, honestly, right? Because you can't underestimate the importance of the quarterback position, I don't think. Even with the crap that they had on defense last year and Andrew Luck not playing his best, they were still an 8-8 team, like you said. So
yeah, they finished a game out of winning the division.
Right.
With all that going on.
Yeah. Number three on that list of the last place teams was the Carolina Panthers, a third best chance to go worst to first. The L.A. Chargers coming in second, and as they put it, the Eagles kind of wound up in the number one spot by default when discussing these rankings on their podcast. They repeatedly said that they didn't feel like they should be at number one for several reasons. But regardless, you know, yeah, the Cowboys, who were 13-2 in games where they tried, they mailed it in week 17 because they had home field locked up throughout in the NFC. But I think the Eagles could be pretty decent this year if Carson Wentz takes an anticipated step forward in year two.
Yeah, I mean, they added some help at receiver, which is what they needed.
Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, you know, coming in. added LeGarrette Blount to give them a more physical presence in the running game, too. Yeah. Ryan Matthews has not been reliable at all, and all the word out of Philly is as soon as he can pass physical, he's out the door. They're going to cut him.
Mm-hmm.
You still have Darren Sproles. They have a pretty good offensive line when they're healthy in Philadelphia,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and then a back I liked coming into the draft was Pumphrey from San Diego State. Mm-hmm. Little guy, Sproles Jr., you know, he turned some heads in the offseason. So.
And really, they were actually, Ryan, excited about Wendell Smallwood. At least that was the talk before they signed LeGarrette Blount. So they have, you know, pretty good depth at that position,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyway, Philadelphia tops the list. It was more, to see where the Jags ended up. And that was fourth out of eight teams in terms of the chance to turn it around. Got some things coming in on the text line here. Let's get to today's question of the day, of course, is what's your all-time favorite nonfiction sports book? Some of the nominees on the text line include Unsportsmanlike Conduct by Walter Byers, the head of the NCAA for 40-plus years, went into the SMU scandal in great detail. Really good book. That one was suggested. This one was in reference to something you said about Jalen Ramsey. I think the texter misunderstood, in case anyone else did. They said, why do you assume the injury, talking about Ramsey's, happened during the season? Couldn't have happened during OTAs. You specifically were saying if it had happened during the season, the surgery would have likely happened in February, something like that. So
yeah, I mean, if it would have been lingering, if he had done it during his offseason training, he wouldn't have been on the practice field. So the guess is that it developed during OTAs, and that's why they did it now.
Right. Another one here in the book club, Evander Holyfield bio was great, especially talking about him and Mike Tyson when they were young and coming up. Was it the 88 Olympics in Seoul? Was that the when Evander Holyfield got disqualified? Evander Holyfield was the most ferocious, devastating boxer on display in those Olympics, and ended up hitting a guy after the bell because the crowd was going absolutely bananas and nobody could hear what was going on, and got disqualified on what looked to be a gold medal run. I want to say he was a cruiserweight back then, something like that.
Sounds right.
Certainly wasn't a heavyweight. Let's see, moving on here. Magic Johnson bio is another one. I'll skip Ball 4. Running for My Life, the Warwick Dunn autobiography. A book on the Gas House Gang, which was the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team in the 1930s, particularly the early 30s, I think, with Dizzy Dean and company. Friday Night Lights. Would love a book that dives into Florida athletics to contrast. That would be pretty interesting.
That'd be kind of cool, yeah.
Now get on that, O'Halloran, or are you just you're going to sign that out to a prep writer to get that done? History of Florida high school football.
That may be interesting. I do have a special one, Dirt. Green Eggs and Ham.
is that a sports book?
Is that nonfiction?
Does that qualify? Not yeah, sure. I suppose it's what you eat for the pregame spread at Wolfson, apparently.
Supposedly,
John Feinstein, Civil War, Army versus Navy, A Year Inside College Football's Purest Rivalry.
That's a good book.
Let's see. This one from Angel Rodriguez said NFL America's Game. We had that one mentioned earlier today. The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle. And The End of America's Childhood by Jane Levy, the greatest game ever played, about the 1966 Notre Dame-Michigan State football game, and Men at Work by George Will, all mentioned there. This is one I wanted to discuss. See all like Jameis Winston as a franchise quarterback based on the buzz been around him, but the Jaguars are doing the same thing with Blake, and y'all want to ship him out of town. Doing what exactly? I'm not sure what that is in reference to that they're doing with Blake. That is similar to what the Bucs are doing with Jameis Winston. If you're talking about winning, it's nowhere near similar. All right, keep in mind the Bucs, the Jags went from the third worst team in the league and have maintained their status as a top five worst team. The Buccaneers went in Jameis Winston's first season to 6 wins. They went from the number one overall pick to a 6-win team to a 9-win team last year. Now, statistically, he hasn't been light years ahead of Blake Bortles, but
here's winning losses, 15-17 for Jameis, 11-34.
That's all it boils down to. It's oh, by the way, Jameis and Blake have similar numbers, but Jameis has a better situation than Blake. And then Blake does in Jacksonville, including coaching staff. Well, you say they have a better coaching staff because they're winning games. Mm-hmm. They were the worst team in the league. I don't know how much better the situation is, how much better the talent base is in Tampa than it is in Jacksonville, honestly. I mean,
look, I don't know how much, you know, Gus Bradley being the coach for the first 4 years deflates Blake Bortles. I don't know. I don't know how much having Dirk Cutter as your head coach elevates Jameis Winston, or if you just have to admit at some point that Jameis Winston is better than Blake Bortles. right? Like, they're winning games in part because their quarterback is Jameis Winston and yours is Blake. And Blake can buck that storyline this year if he wants to, but he has to go out and do it. He's won 11 games in 3 years as a starter compared to 15-2 for Jameis Winston. They're not on the same plane right now.
Here's another one. Hey, Mike, you said, I don't know where people get this. Hey, Mike, you said the Redskins don't have any offensive players. Didn't I say they have an outstanding collection of offensive skill talent around Kirk Cousins, particularly receiving talent? No, they went on to say, don't you think Terrell Pryor might be a sleeper fantasy player this year? He's fully woke, okay? He's not a sleeper whatsoever. If you can get him in the fourth round, fantastic. You might have to get him in the third round, the way he's coming off the board this year. And yes, Jamison Crowder, we don't know what Josh Doctson's going to do, but when Jordan Reed's healthy, he is one of the top three offensive weapons at his position in the National Football League. So, again, I think you misheard that one. Bet you did a trade out on those tires. Bet you I didn't. Bet you I didn't. Go to tireoutlet.com. Cam is an a-hole. Met him twice. Looked me right in my face when I merely said hello and ignored me. I know who that's from. That's from our man Monroe.
Oh, right, yeah.
He's, because he added, you were there. Yeah, well, I do remember. And, you know, again, how he treats the media is not necessarily how he treats his teammates. Yeah. I have no idea how that goes. And then finally, this one, I'm happy for Derek Carr and him getting the money, but he wouldn't have the same results if he was drafted here with this franchise. You just don't know that. The biggest flaw coming out of college was his inability to deal with pressure, which is what we discussed. And imagine him playing for this franchise with Luke Jokel as his left tackle, Zane Beatles as his left guard, the combination of Bolanco and Wisniewski at center, the combination of Guy Wimper and Jeremy Parnell as his right tackle. I think the result of this franchise would be in the same position that it is right now.
Well, he played with Wisniewski.
That's true. He's right. He was his starter the year before he came to Jacksonville. That's a good point. This Oakland offensive line has evolved to one of the best ones in the AFC. Yeah.
They've sunk the resources that should be sunk into an O-line to block for who you think is a franchise quarterback.
Right. And, for instance, Kelechi Osemele. They went out and got him last year. Now, did that take their O-line to a much higher level of play? Yes, it did. But Carr was seen to be on the ascent before that. You might be right. He might not have the exact same results, but I think the knock on him not being able to deal with pressure great may have been an erroneous one, because as we pointed out, you can look at countless examples of him staring down the rush and delivering strikes last year and putting himself right there in the MVP conversation.
And they also signed Rodney Hudson to play center.
That's right.
For Kansas City to replace Wisniewski.
Right. Another good young offensive lineman that wasn't there when he arrived. So, hey, look, who knows? It's all hypothetical as far as that goes. I know this. I think right now you'd make that trade, and even if it cost you 5 years, $125 million, I think you'd do
Wouldn't
it happily.
Wouldn't even think about it.
Make it very happily,
yes.
Right? So with all that cap space that you have right now. All right, we will come back, and we'll get into Twitter and Facebook's response to our question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. What is your all-time favorite nonfiction sports book? It's straight ahead. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for my friends at Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. The Ultimate Italian is your sandwich of the month for the month of June and is ultimately loaded with delicious meats and cheeses, capicola ham, Genoa salami, pepperoni, mozzarella, all on a Parmesan roll, and you can get it for $3.99 at Area Circle K. So check that one out if you want a great deal on a sandwich. Maybe you haven't tried it from Dandy before. Like all their offerings, fresh ingredients, many of them locally sourced right here in the Jacksonville area. Delicious fresh bread variety and price point that puts a smile on your face. And variety, yeah, they've got it for everybody. Sandwiches out the wazoo, the Boom Boom Chicken, the Ham and Cheese Twist, the City Block Cheeseburger, a third-pound char-broiled beef patty with cheddar cheese, Swiss cheese, little mustard-blended pickles on a rustic onion ciabatta square, all together an 11-ounce burger. Just one of the many new menu items that Dandy is serving up. So whether it's ball games, beach time, anytime you're hungry for food on the go, Dandy's got the selection. Go on, make yours a Dandy and do it today. I should go through the stack of unread sports books in the little Dempsey Sports Library, see what's good in there.
Should.
I should, but I know I won't. I say that.
We have a kid. You're exempt from that.
Is that right? I don't have to read anymore?
Yeah.
The learning has stopped?
I mean, until they get really older.
And they're out of the house?
Yeah.
I still spend plenty of time on the iPad. What am I supposed to do when my son is in his room on his iPad?
Well,
I could read.
You could read.
Yeah.
But my brother has a 6- and 10-year-old, and he was like, give it to me. Give me the book in 5 years. Because he's a, there's not. There's,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I go through little flurries where I read in the off season, and then once season starts, forget it, man. Yeah. Way too deep into the football kind of stuff out there. Is it weird? I like my kid uses the iPad a lot, but I won't let him have a phone. He doesn't need a phone. You know, he's nowhere where he needs at this stage so far, at least where he needs a phone.
Yeah, when he starts driving.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's never gonna. That'll be like when he's 23. I can't drive my kid.
You got legs, don't you?
Exactly. And then back in my day, we used them. We walked places. We actually did uphill both ways. All right. Today's question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, was and is: what is your all-time favorite nonfiction sports book? Not the best. It didn't have to be critically acclaimed. Which one did you like? Some interesting ones, Tony. Before we get to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian on the Facebook page, have you heard of this? Playing the Moldavans at Tennis. Have you heard of this book?
I have not.
To prove that practice in a given sport is more important than innate athletic ability, a guy named Tony Hawks, not a skateboarder, he's a comedian. And I know the skateboarder is a singular, Tony Hawk. Anyway, this comedian set out on a bet to beat every member of the Moldavan national soccer team at tennis. In other words, we know these guys are very good athletes. No matter how big your country is, if you're on the national team, you're probably a pretty good athlete. And soccer is a very athletic sport. At stake, a public naked rendition of the Moldavan national anthem. He does not give away the ending. We don't know who won. Are there really any winners in that? I don't know. But that does sound kind of interesting, Adrian. That was definitely one out of left field that I hadn't heard of. Daniel Stewart went with Hurricane, The Miraculous Journey of Reuben Carter, which was obviously made into a movie as well by James Hirsch. Read this book in high school and have loved it ever since, and that would be Necessary Roughness. Never read that one either. I haven't read many football books. It's a novel. That is a novel, right? No. Is that a novel? That's Marie G. Lee, who wrote Necessary Roughness. I think that was a fictional book. Am I wrong about that?
I'm looking.
That was made into a movie, too, right? But I was always under the impression maybe they missed the not. I might be wrong. Paper Lion by George Plimpton, where he embedded himself with the Detroit Lions. What was that, for a training camp, Ryan?
Yeah,
that
he did? Lions quarterback.
And he got to play, right, didn't
I think
he?
So.
In the preseason back in the day. Of course, they had a lot more. They had at least six preseason games back then. Jags to Riches, another nomination. Ian sent in. He's showed a picture of some of his favorites here. Uncommon Life by Tony Dungy. Astonishing but True Sports Stories. I used to read. I would just, if you had a baseball trivia book, man, I just would read that cover to cover. It's obviously, you know, it's not a what you think of as a nonfiction book.
Yeah, I still have a handful of, like, those kind of books from when I was a kid.
No doubt.
You know, like the NFL trivia book, the MLB trivia book.
I'd have my sister
quiz me
on them. From like
1985.
Baseball Prospectus, Steve Blass, A Pirate for Life, and To Hate Like This Is to Be Happy Forever. That looks like somebody who is anti-Coach K based on the picture of Coach K. Mm-hmm. That's very unflattering on the cover there. What do we get on Twitter today?
Here's what we got from Black Dog Express: Jerry Kramer's Instant Replay. From Brian: Run to Daylight by Vince Lombardi. He says as a kid he slept with that book. From Oz Dog: Jags to Riches by John Osher, again omitting Pete Prisco there. From John Michael: Born to Play by Dustin Pedroia, best Dollar Tree book I've ever read in my life.
Wow, I didn't know they sold books at Dollar Tree.
Apparently there's a shelf somewhere. It'd be an interesting shelf of
what's,
books at the
what's
Dollar Tree.
In the Dollar Tree section? I could think of some that belong there,
yes.
But I will keep my mouth shut and self-censor.
From EI Entertainment, we got Nice Guys Finish Last by Leo Durcher. Read this as a kid in New York.
Leo who? DeRocher, baby.
DeRocher, excuse me.
Leo the Lip.
Need to read it again. It's been a while. From Brian: Never Die Easy, the autobiography of Walter Payton. We got a nominee for Ball
Never
4.
Die Easy was the autobiography of Walter Payton.
If he says so.
Is that right?
I mean,
is that not crazily ironic? I'm not saying he died easily, but I mean, he died so young.
Sure.
Right?
From Ocho Fisho: Driving with the Devil. It's a story of early NASCAR. From Bodalicious, he nominates a book, Tim Richmond, The Fast Life and Remarkable Times of NASCAR's Top Gun, which apparently Days of Thunder is loosely based on.
Well, he didn't contract HIV? Tim Richmond, I'm pretty sure he did, yep, right? Yep. He was just like this wild lifestyle guy and, into whatever he was into.
From Stewart, When Pride Still Mattered, another biography of Vince Lombardi. There's a bunch of Vince Lombardi stuff. I've read that one of Vince, and I read a story about his first season when he got to Green Bay, and that's when they had a big turnaround, but they didn't win the championship until the next year. But it was his first year, and it went through the entire offseason, basically, and the team that he put together that eventually became a champion the next year. But no one's been written about more in football than Vince Lombardi. There's probably 25 books out there that you can go read a biography of Vince.
What would the looking ahead into the future a year here after Ryan O'Halloran goes to press with his story of the 2017 Jaguar season, what will it be called?
Unlikely Super.
Unlikely Champs, right? From Jags to Riches 2. Finally, the return of TC. I don't know. What would it be called? I guess it depends on the outcome. So that may be a story for another day. That may be a question for another day down the line. Hey, by the way, don't forget, tomorrow, Mayor Lenny Curry will join us tomorrow roughly around 10:30, and he'll spend about 20 or 25 minutes here with us, and we'll do one long segment with him talking about the future of sports here in Jacksonville, the Jaguars' place in that, Shad Khan, and developing the area down here around the stadium and the riverfront and all that stuff.
His take on the draft.
Bringing the draft here, absolutely, yeah. Is that if you had a chance to sit down with the mayor, would that be the first topic you would discuss?
Yeah, I would. From Jaguars' perspective, is how many people can you handle downtown?
That's a good question.
That event,
yeah. Because what are they bringing in Philly outside? Like attendance was in the hundreds of thousands, yeah, right? Like 200,000 or 300,000 at its peak. Yeah, interestingly, the NFL put out their calendar, for significant dates moving forward. And TBA, in terms of where the draft will be held, they've announced the draft weekend date for next year. But everyone I talk to just assumes it's going back to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Unless, hey, look, I guess you keep it TBA in case somebody wants to blow your doors off with some kind of financial offer. But from everything you heard about the way Philly handled things, I'd be surprised it wasn't back there. All right, Ryan O'Halloran, what do you got coming up in the next few days?
Have some Jaguar notes and stuff for Sunday's paper. We'll continue that going through the next month. Some thoughts on the training camp schedule and a little bit about the guy they claimed off waivers yesterday. So, but as it's a slow time for the team, slow time for us. So we'll have something every Sunday, though.
You know where it's not slow? At the Wild Wing Cafe, where Joe Cowart is setting up right now as the Midday Chalk getting ready to entertain and inform you for the next several hours. What's up, Joe C? How are you, bud?
Dude, I'm doing good. I'm kind of in my environment. You know, you got the wing bar here, and they got all the different flavors. They've tossed them in that hot sauce, and so we'll be ready to go. And more than anything else, us and the Frank Francis Show are going to hang out all day until 6 o'clock tonight, and we're hoping that we can get some gloves donated, new or used mainly, but baseballs, gloves, bats, whatever it is to try and get some kids on the First Coast playing baseball. So we're looking – I mean, it's going to be a good day.
All right, when you're a kid, man, there's nothing wrong with a hand-me-down glove. I had a glove. Living in Connecticut, I had a glove that I left out one entire winter in the yard, and it was still fantastic the next year. So you can only imagine you're going to get a lot better equipment through this than the glove I played with.
Were you the guy that you would take that baseball, put it in the new glove, rub it down with the oil, put the leather strap around it, put it underneath your mattress? Did you do that?
Oh, when I absolutely freaking – I mean, step of that, when I played organized baseball, I got the saddle soap, man. You get the ball, you put it in there, you tie it up with some string or whatever, to bind it, and
the
absolutely
oven,
put it in the mattress.
All of it, yeah.
See, I didn't put it in the oven. I didn't do the oven, but no question about it. Joe C., before we cut you loose, what's your favorite sports book, nonfiction, that you've ever read?
Ooh, favorite sports book, nonfiction. You know, it's funny, Rick and I were talking about this the other day, Bud, Sweat, and Tease with the
pretty good
Alan Shipnick. Yeah, Alan Shipnick writing it about Rich Beam and Steve Duplantis, his caddy, and it just so happens we brought that up the other day. So that's a good one.
Great book, but for Mike Dempsey, believe it or not, I'm going to say it, my favorite book of all time in sports?
Bronx Zoo.
The one, the only. Non-fiction. The Bronx Zoo. Yeah, okay. Sparky Lyle's The Bronx Zoo is absolutely phenomenal.
Okay. It really all is. Right.
Great book.
Yeah, go ahead, Joey.
Yeah, I've not read that one, so I have to make sure I put that one down. The Bronx Zoo, so that's good. Yeah, heck yeah.
Not on the list, Joe. You're a golf guy. Is Tiger Woods' new book that came out about the 97 Masters? Is written in crayon.
All right, boys. Midday chalk, minutes away. We'll hear from right, you coming up. Good luck with the toy drive or the equipment drive going on at their Wild Wing Cafe. Joe C., Rick Ballew, and T-Wig with the Midday Chalk. Just minutes away right here. Ryan O'Halloran signing off. So
we're still on.
Oh, yeah. We got to go. It's like, yes. We're still on, Ryan, just for a moment or two.
Got to get used to this new format.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. It's
Bronx
woolly.
Zoo. I remember I read that when I was a kid. I probably need to go back and read it again.
It was I could, you know, quote you chapter and verse probably on some of the stories from back in the
day. I remember
day.
Reading a book. It's related to the Yankees. It was called The Pitch That Killed, I think. It was about the Carl Mays pitch when he hit Ray Chapman.
Yeah.
In like 1920. I remember reading a book about that, and it was fascinating.
The only player to die due to an on-field injury in baseball history.
Yeah.
Got beamed in the head. I think Mays was a submarine pitcher, you know, the Dan Quisenberry style, and caught him right in the temple. Pre-helmet days, and still took him another 30-ish years or so to bring helmets into Major League Baseball.
And if you're, because no one's mentioned it yet, if you are someone who's trying to, if you're interested in the history of the league instead of the history of a player or something like that, a book that came out just a handful of years ago, The Games That Changed the Game, The Evolution of the NFL, basically in 7 NFL Sundays, and that's a Ron Jaworski
book.
That's
a good book.
And he goes through it's basically stories of these 7 offenses or defenses and how they revolutionized football over the course of the last 75 years, but it's about specific teams on specific days, and it's really, really good if you are interested in the history of the league.
Jaguars today, book club going strong. Blake Bortles has a rival now. What does he have, his Wikipedia page club going?
Yeah, it's the Wikipedia reading
club. Is he still doing that?
I don't know.
Don't either.
I don't know. It was a direct response to Andrew Luck having the book club.
Yes, it was. Well trolled. All right, that does it for us today on Jaguars Today. The Honorable Mayor of Jacksonville, Lenny Curry, joins us in studio tomorrow. Should be the highlight of the show. So tweet us your questions if you got them. That'll be tomorrow's question of the day. We'll post it early if you've got sports-related questions for the mayor. Not getting into political kind of stuff other than the direct impact on the sports landscape and vice versa. We can do some of those tomorrow. We'll pass a few of those along to the mayor himself. So for Ryan O'Halloran, for Fat Tony, and for Agent Gibbs, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. Thanks for tuning in to Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, folks, let me tell you about my friends at Harry's Razors. Best shave in the business? Absolutely. Best price in the business? Absolutely. And on top of that, the convenience of delivering to your front door when you need them on your schedule. You know what? Not everybody needs to shave as much as everybody else. Some people are daily shavers. You got a more heavy rotation. For me, I can get away with a couple of days a week. But the beauty of it is I've got the best razors at my fingertips. And Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades as much as I do. They're going to give you their trial set for free if you're willing to cover shipping. That trial set includes a Truman set ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, and a post shave balm. Altogether, you'd pay about $20 for that, but this offer gives you that for the cost of shipping, and it's only available for our listeners if you use promo code Dempsey at harrys.com when you check out. Get started with Harry's today. Get their free trial offer, almost a $20 value for free. Cover a few bucks in shipping. That includes a handle, blade, shave gel, and post shave balm. Go to harrys.com right now. Enter code Dempsey at checkout. That's harrys.com, promo code Dempsey. Don't wait. Get started with Harry's today.